ask about Illuminati.
Since the charting of P-Tux,
is it Disney mind control?
Is this MK Ultra Deluxe?
Go Disney,
go wish upon a star.
Go Disney,
you know what to chat for.
Go Disney,
Pino Plan, Pinocchio.
Go Disney,
as above, so below.
Pinocchio seeks for a pleasure island, where traffickers need just falling minds.
Captain Hook, a lost boy in Neverland,
saving kids from Peter Pan's designs.
Nemo fails to survive the Barracuda,
and that nobody means no one.
Snow White never took another breath.
Bird Prince, the angel of death has come.
Go Disney,
we go from real to real.
Go Disney,
Bohemian Grove and no more feel.
Go Disney,
ask about to Illuminati.
Go Disney,
we teach a code to everybody.
Go Disney,
go wish upon a star.
Go Disney,
you know what to check for.
Oh, go Disney,
the new brand Pinocchio.
Yeah, yeah. Go Disney, it's a fun show with your
Go Disney, please enjoy the show.
Hello, welcome. It's the Occult Disney Podcast, where we go through every theatrical animated Disney film and intimidate them like dinosaurs. Rawr, I'm a dinosaur named Matt.
It's a paranoid. Does that mean American you're not real?
Bear. Yeah, you want to be a dinosaur? You could be a phantom of the night.
I'd rather be a dragon. If we're just gonna go with mythological creatures, I'll go with dragon.
Okay. Yeah. I did just watch speaking of the year 2000 and dodgy CGI, I just watched the for my bad film, good and bad film podcast, the 2000 Dungeons and Dragons. So any failings that Disney's dinosaur had was kind of like, you know, broad stroke brushed over by the fact that I had just seen the 2000 Dungeons and Dragons, which have the worst CGI dragons ever. So seeing like 2000 era CGI dinosaurs from a major studio was almost like nice.
Remind me too, was that the one with Marlon Wayans in it?
Yes, and he exits halfway through the movie probably because he needed to go make Requiem for a Dream. That was, yeah, apparently he's filming both at the same time, and the one saving grace of that movie is Jeremy Irons screaming gibberish is great.
I remember that was the first movie I saw when I came out of boot camp, and I was so excited to just watch anything from like the modern time. It was a letdown. Even then, it was a letdown. Even when I was starved for entertainment, it was a letdown.
Have you seen the newer one by chance? The one from last year?
The 2000 one was so bad, it has made me not want to watch any of the newer ones, although I feel like they set the bar so low, it can only go up.
Yeah, the one last year, I watched that as well, and it's that one's charming. It's kind of like doing Dungeons and Dragons, like the Marvel movie mode, so you got to accept that, and, you know, I guess it helps if you like Chris Pine, and it's much more watchable, but, you can go to YouTube and watch Jeremy Irons screaming and gibberish if you want, so that is worth seeing, with terrible CGI dragons behind him. So I'm just saying I biased myself watching Dinosaur last night, because like I think these aren't good, but they look good because I just watched that other piece of garbage. So how does the animation sit with you in the year 2024?
Yeah, I guess let's just get the animation commentary out of the way now so we don't have to like keep bringing it up throughout. So it's good. I guess my main note that I kind of took on the technical level was that I really wish I had seen this in the theater at the time. Because that was, man, 2000 through the very early 2000s was sort of this sweet spot where it was pretty much unaffordable for a normal person to have like a theatrical setup, like high resolution surround sound, like the same fidelity that you would get at a movie theater. It's not the same today. Like today, you, in my opinion, you could unless you're going to IMAX, you can replicate a freaking theater experience with some blackout curtains and like a $400 TV, you know, 4K and all that stuff. But at the time this movie came out, there really wasn't anything comparable. You might have gotten the DVD. So that being said, it probably was absolutely spectacular when it first came out. It's way better than A Bug's Life, but not a whole lot. I mean, I guess a little bit, but there's a lot of sort of just general shading stuff you'd almost expect in a modern day video game for a lot of this stuff. And there was one scene in particular I'll just skip to now with my
computer. Can I guess? Are we talking dark and there's the CGI and the practical effects and some explosions?
Well, that's some of it.
Okay. I was like, that actually looks good when that part was on. I was like, that's surprisingly good.
I didn't mind that part. The biggest part that I was like, what the hell did I just see? Is the final battle where they push like the T-Rex off the cliff, or it might not have been a T-Rex. I forgot to look up what dinosaurs they really were in this one, but they push him off the cliff and there's like this slow-mo scene as he falls off the cliff, and it almost seemed as though they rendered the 3D video out and then they applied the slow-mo to the video instead of rendering it out slow-mo in 3D, because it has this weird like frame interpolation, like staggered look. Did you notice that at all, or am I going crazy?
No, I think you're hitting it with an animator eye. Or, you know,
okay, maybe it's very, very possible, but I was like, that's frame interpolation, that's not animation. So if anyone knows what that means, then welcome.
I mean, there's some things where you just have to be, maybe it's like the soap opera effect thing. If you upscale Blu-ray to a 4K TV and everything suddenly looks weird because it's like adding frames between the frames.
Well, this one was almost the opposite. It was almost like it was showing us a sequence of like very slow frames. Like it went down to like 2 frames a second or something really weird just for the slow-mo part where the T-Rex falls off a cliff. Spoiler alert, dinosaurs die in the movie.
No way. Okay. I am looking, this went into not production, but they were thinking about it starting about the mid 80s. It seems where, Phil Tippett directed 1984's Prehistoric Beast, which was a 10-minute experimental animated short film. He did the ED-209 for RoboCop, so that's pretty cool. Okay. Like, he did that stop motion. But yeah, you know, once Jurassic Park rolled around, Disney was like, we cannot do a practical dinosaurs. Although there's the sitcom, right? Of course, that's cartoonish dinosaurs, but... actually, there's a question in the end. What look do you like better?
The Disney dinosaur TV show, far superior in every way. I mean, that is. I actually rewatched the entire series recently, like a year ago, and it holds up so well. I mean, part of it is the nostalgia, which I won't be able to separate, but it really does feel like a timeless, very poignant, sarcastic, witty. It was amazing. Like, I really think that show. Does it get the praise it deserves?
If it's remembered, I think it does. If it's not remembered, like you said, that's where I think that's the nostalgia factor on this one. There is the you have to know it thing, but otherwise, yeah, if you know it, I think people, I've never heard someone say that show was garbage.
I grew up with it. I just wonder if, like, you know, some young buck that had never heard of it, you know, born post 9/11. If they watched it and they would think it was as good, or if it was slow and boring because it doesn't have, you know, flash cuts every 2 seconds.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you said flash cuts. I was thinking what else from that time would be something that I might like that just would sits weird today, which would be that Flash TV show, which 1991 or two, one season, loved it. I watched it.
Really? I wasn't a fan.
Oh, I was about to say I watched it 15 years later. I was like, this is garbage. So
for me, the Nicktoons, almost all the, or at least the big ones were, you know, Doug, Rugrats, Eek, Real Monsters, Rocko's Modern Life.
Okay, well, I will easily grant you Doug greater than the Flash TV show. That's, I mean, yeah, I'm putting that.
Okay, now, you haven't watched any real Doug. You've watched Disney Doug, right?
Right, right. But yeah, when I got back to The Flash, I had a little bit of nostalgia and a little bit like, yeah, this isn't very good. I also just always liked The Flash. I just pre-ordered the crappy movie from last year, partly because I got the Blu-ray for like $4 on a pre-order. So like, I'll watch it for $4.
Have you ever seen the original Punisher?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I haven't seen the later Punishers. I've only seen the Dolph Lundgren one.
Oh, okay. I know we are so far off Dinosaur, but let me just take this as
before we start. Before we said this was going to happen. So
yeah, we'll go on a few tangents on this one. Don't worry. We've got Dino stuff coming up. But I just need to say, if you've only seen the original Punisher, I feel like you're in a very tiny niche of people that have only seen the worst Punisher movie ever made and none of the decent ones. But the Thomas Jane one that followed that one is more than decent and serviceable. That one's actually like a really good watch. But man, there's one called Punisher Warzone, which might as well be considered straight to video. I think it had a short theatrical release, but it was one of the most comic booky feeling movies I think I've ever seen. So Punisher Warzone, well worth it.
Ready to do it, just haven't watched them, that's all.
Okay.
I've been holding up my...
Is Warzone in there? I don't see Warzone in there.
This one's Warzone.
Oh, is that Warzone?
Okay. It's the Japanese packaging, of course. Part of my often cited Blu-ray apocalypse. So I got these for like 50 cents a piece on Blu-ray. That's, you know, nice. So that's the thing, I've turned my room into my little West Coast Video, not Blockbuster.
are there Japanese dubs on either of those?
Yeah, of course.
See, that I feel like I'm missing out. I don't think I've ever even considered seeing some of my favorite movies with Japanese dubs.
Oh, I could watch so many movies with Japanese dubs. Because I, you know, since my daughter's and my wife's first language is Japanese, I tend to do one. I put on the Japanese subtitles because I want her, my daughter in particular, to hear the English, right? So I'll put the subtitles on. But yeah, you know, sometimes I go downstairs and my in-laws are watching whatever they're showing on NHK that night. And that's usually a dub. So I have seen some, what was the last one? Oh, The Last Action Hero. I saw that in Japanese and that was pretty weird. Like, it was the scene when he's still in the movie and, you know, cars are just flipping all over the place and Schwarzenegger shouting in Japanese. And it's a little bit, yeah, it's fun.
It was a golden time in cinema, in my opinion. That, I mean, that whole stretch from mid 90s to mid 2000s.
One problem I did with, I remember not hating this film the first time I saw it, but just feeling nothing, which honestly is, I mean, it was okay, but that's mostly what I felt watching it again. I think I watched it first time about 2005, which was exactly the wrong time to watch it, because you can see like, oh, CG animation's gotten this much better. So this just looks, it just looked bad at the time, where later it's like, okay, I can accept the time, I can accept like the stylization has something to it. But that is one of the big pitfalls of CGI in general, is when you do it hand-drawn, you can make it, you know, in certain cheap ways and it can look cool. Whereas CGI, if you screw up, it just looks bad.
Yeah, it's definitely stands out in that way. But I think that the story, it's enough to carry it through. I think the critical reception for this movie, even now, is pretty high. It's higher than I expected to see it.
Yeah, same here. I can look, but yeah, just see what the Rotten Tomatoes was.
The various sites I was looking at, it was around like a 7.5-ish.
That sounds about right. So yeah, but I definitely watched it at the wrong time the first time I saw it. It'd be like, what would we watch now that would just look like garbage because it's like, you know,
Bugs 10 Life. Years or...
Well, that just didn't age in the end, right? That's had the test of time that it failed. Where
remember the show Reboot? It was like a Saturday morning show in the late 90s.
That's a one I've heard of, but is again right out of probably my age group. But I've heard it oft cited. Yes. How does that?
I remember just because when it came on, it was like, oh man, like I got to find something else. I think Wish Kid came on right around that time, so I just switched over to USA.
That's why I've never seen any of Transformers Beast Wars, because I don't know, that was 97. That's something that could have caught my attention a little bit, but the CGI was so cheap and dodgy. It's basically like three Transformers in a giant field is like most of the show, or in a cave. So Dinosaur is way more expansive than that. Of note, of course, is it's actually a hybrid filmed animation, and that most of the backgrounds are film crews going out and shooting some great stuff. And I was thinking, if I had shot some of those sweeping, you know, canyon shots, and then people put like, you know, CGI dinosaurs on it, I might feel a little depressed. And I wonder if it was some of the same crews going out and filming the soaring attraction. Soarin' had sort of similar. Well, that's California though, so maybe not.
So just to point this out, because I feel like it's worth mentioning that the 90s through the early 2000s was some weird like time when everyone loved dinosaurs. And I don't, maybe I'm just not a kid anymore, or maybe I'm just not being marketed to as directly, but I mean, we had the Disney Dinosaurs show. We had We're Back, Dinosaur Story, which was pretty damn good. We had Land Before Time and like a million of the sort of sequels to that one. We had Barney. We had there was one called like The Last Dinosaur that was like about a guy, like a dinosaur that played the guitar. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
No, I was thinking of the good dinosaur.
Denver the Last Dinosaur. That's okay, I think that's the name of it.
Oh, what's his name?
Denver the Last Dinosaur.
Oh, that sounds familiar now that you're throwing Denver on it.
There was a number of other ones too. There was a bunch of like dinosaur related cartoons and TV shows and movies. I actually just saw Tammy and the T-Rex. I don't know if you've ever seen this one. Have you heard about this? I have heard of that.
Isn't that
it is worth a watch. It is MK Ultra mixed with like dinosaur animatronics, and it's a self-aware bad movie, but it's done halfway decent. But then there was the Whoopi Goldberg movie with the dinosaur. Like there were so many dinosaur campy properties in the 90s, the early 2000s. I don't know why that is, and I wish that we went through another one of those cycles, but I don't see it on the horizon.
I know why Tammy and the T-Rex struck a bell in my head. The director is Stuart Raffel, who also made Mac and Me and the Philadelphia Experiment. So
okay, checks out.
Yeah.
It's got, it's got some practical effects that are not great, but they're still better than, say, Bugs Life CGI.
And if you're talking about, weird conspiracy stuff like MK Ultra and Tammy and the T-Rex, the Philadelphia Experiment, geez, that's a, you know, Montauk, all that. So that guy obviously had his head in something.
Well, yeah, and aliens with the Mac and Me. So yeah, that
nude porno aliens, yes.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really good sort of like a Whitman sampler of cinema / conspiracy. Dude, even RoboCop that you brought up earlier, right? One of the guys that worked on this dinosaur movie. RoboCop is conspiracy theory as hell. That's such a dystopian AI taking over. Corporations are lying and using it, against the people. Like that's classic conspiracy theory.
Well, and then, yeah, I mean, Verhoeven's whole 80s, 90s, you know, film auteur is that sort of stuff. Like Starship Troopers, like I saw that opening night and was like, that was a great parody. And it took like 5 years for people to notice it was a satire. At first, we were like, that movie's stupid. It's badly acted. I'm like, what? You're not getting the point.
I loved the movie the first time I saw it. Before, I mean, I didn't even realize that there was any sort of a debate about what it was about for a decade afterwards. Like, it was just an immediate classic movie.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Although, I should double check. Tippett, the guy that did the ED-209, did he actually
when they did those little propaganda clips, like wasn't that over the top obvious that it was satire?
I thought, but apparently it just seems some people did not for some reason. So like people are stupid. Yeah. Maybe it's because I was a Saved by the Bell fan, so I just picked up on it immediately, you know.
I don't know, that might be a treat to watch Starship Troopers the first time, not get it, and then watch it later on in life and being in on it. It might be an interesting experience.
Oh, actually, I'm looking at the page here, and it seems Tippett and Verhoeven were both in on the original concept, but neither of them actually were involved in the final production. So this is one of those things where it went through like 8 different hands before it was released. And I guess this is in our Disney narrative, this is the past the Renaissance. I guess Tarzan is basically the last Disney Renaissance film. So this is the company, and we could put more on it, more sauce on it if you want, but this is like them being like, crap, we need to get ready for the future. I mean, after this, the hand-drawn animation is just becomes more and more of an afterthought. So,
well, there are some masterful scenes in this movie, despite maybe the rendering ends, because honestly, all they really had to do is they could re-render this movie today with a better physics modeling engine that makes the light look more realistic, and it would probably eliminate almost all the major criticisms that I've got for it, which is mostly like shadows and lighting, and that's kind of what makes it all stand out. They look kind of like that CGI fake look. So the actual modeling and the animation, aside from the weird slow-mo scenes, a lot of that stuff looks great. Like, it actually still holds up if you can just kind of like put past, squint, you know, some of the lower quality stuff.
No, you know, it's like, why are we making these digital monstrosities of remakes of The Lion King and Aladdin, which I think we've talked about why, but just like, why not this one? This one makes perfect sense. Like you said, you don't even have to remake it. You could just like re-render it.
Yeah, but there's no IP on this one, man. Like, there's no, oh, I really love Suni. I guess there's some people out there that probably love Suni the monkey. I did see someone commenting on, I don't know if it was one of our previous videos, we were talking about Dinosaur, but they were saying that they remember the Happy Meal toys that came with it, and they've got like this really deep nostalgia for this particular movie. I don't remember any of that because, you know, I was not in my same sort of mind when this movie came out, but I guess people have an affinity for it. And I, again, like if I had seen it when it came out, it probably wouldn't have made a huge impact.
One podcast I listened to is podcast The Ride, where they've now had a 5-year-long argument about whether baby Aladar is cute or not.
I mean, so, it's presented as such, so I guess it's all subjective at that point, but it's the intention is to present it as a cute baby dinosaur, for sure. That feels objectively true.
There was a lot of the production, pre-production, again, including people like we've been talking about that are not in the film, but up to close to being made, this was going to have no dialogue. And I wondered if that, well, that'd be walking with dinosaurs then, I guess, but
I got that vibe. I actually took a note at, because this is the first time that I've ever seen the movie Dinosaur. I didn't see it when it came out. I never saw it, maybe in passing, but I'm almost positive I've seen commercials for it and never the movie. So as I'm watching it, it's like 6 minutes in and I was like, oh my God, there hasn't been a single line of dialogue. I wonder if that means we're not going to have to deal with any musical numbers too. That's great. And then someone started talking around 7.5 minutes in, but spoiler alert, happy to report, there are no musical numbers in this movie. So I feel like it gains like a full integer point just for not having a musical as part of it.
Maybe that's where I'm a little more lukewarm on it than you. Because of that, I'm putting it more, not in my mind critically, I'm not thinking as much as a Disney animated film, as I'm like comparing this.
You
more
need a just song? Like, you need a song and dance?
No, I don't need a song. I'm just saying like, that makes me compare this just with like straight up movies more, which I think when you watch a Disney animated, when you silo it a little more, you're like, well, I know it's going to have a tune or two. Again, we watched I'll The Country Bears and we were like, we love it. We hate the musical numbers. You know, we love the movie, hate the numbers. So we're willing to give it that because it's like, well, that's how these things work. You know, that's part of the programming.
It's missing the musical numbers. It's, in my opinion, it's missing any really identifiable IP characters. Like, there's a lemur and there's a dinosaur, but they don't have any really specific, none of them are Littlefoot, right? None of them are Sarah from Land Before Time. Like, those were character, I can't remember all the character names, but like those ones stood out and they stuck around. Hell, Robbie and the baby from the dinosaur TV show, right? Like, they've, and of course, these are all anthropomorphized way more than this Disney one is. But this Disney one, it's almost just like watching a History Channel recreation. So like, it would be hard to make a plush toy that kids fall in love with based on the aesthetics of a History Channel simulation, you know?
Well, one of the things they say is for you know, especially animated IP stuff is the silhouette distinctive? Which is a double-edged sword when you come to dinosaurs, because yes, a dinosaur silhouette is very distinctive, but you can't really just take it for yourself. You know, people see that, they're like, oh, that's a T-Rex. If anything, they'll think of Jurassic Park, you know, even if it's a Triceratops, you know, they'll think Jurassic Park.
That's a great example too, that somehow, and they didn't have to make it cute, so maybe there was, it was easier, but Jurassic Park, like, what is it? The Diplodocus, or I'm probably screwing that one up. The one that the sprays one that spit, the acid.
Yes. Okay. Well, I know what you're talking about. So hopefully Kevin, the listeners got it too.
like that. And just the way that they looked and the practical effects, like it had a very like almost trademarked aesthetic to it that, again, this Disney movie was just kind of lacking. Like it felt like you could make your own dinosaur movie. If you just go on Sketchfab, which is like a free source 3D model library, you could probably go and grab some dinosaurs and some assets that look very similar to some of the stuff in this movie and basically recreate some of that. So it's, I don't know, it's missing a lot of that extra Disney magic. There is the Disney proxy, but the rest of the Disney magic isn't really in this movie that I could tell.
Well, yeah, the family's gone in 7 minutes, so...
Well, this
does it with Tarzan speed.
I think it's like 4 minutes. I think I noted that. It was like within 5 minutes in, there was already a death, and then the egg gets completely removed from its parents. So yeah, within the first 5 minutes of the movie, Disney proxy is in full effect. But
and
they don't.
15 minutes, and the second family is now being destroyed.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They do it twice. Oh, by the way, you were asking, are dinosaurs still popular with kids? At my job, we just had spring school where it was this time travel lesson because they could sell it easy. So it's basically aliens and dinosaurs, right? You can sell that to kids. And there
Where do the aliens come in?
I don't know. At the main school, they built like a time machine, a big box with like blinking Christmas lights. And I did not get to use that, unfortunately, because I don't teach at the main school. But you know, we have these dinosaur drill cards. And in the first place I worked, it had it written on there. Second, it didn't, right? So I have like real small kids in this class, and I basically have like a 3-year-old kid telling me the names of all these dinosaurs that I definitely do not know, you know? So I was like, yeah, the 3-year-old's teaching the class now. He knows all these.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the same though, because there was kids that I remember growing up and they're like, I can name every capital in Africa. And it's like, you know, get out of here. Like, get out of here. But it didn't necessarily mean that there was like awesome, cute IP that went along with every one of those capitals. Just like if you know every name of the dinosaur, just because you're on the spectrum doesn't mean the dinosaurs are necessarily cool with the rest of the kids. Mm-hmm. Like there was something very specific where at any given time in the 90s, there was at least like 3 or 4 different dinosaur themed shows and at least 1 or 2 dinosaur themed movies in the theaters. Like it felt like that for a solid 10 years.
Do you think that is, I mean, is that just the Jurassic Park explosion, or do you think that there's a little more in the air to that? Millennial fever? I don't know. Maybe we're all going to, people get apocalyptic in their mind, like we're about to go the way that dinosaurs, I guess kids aren't thinking that, but yeah. But yeah, it could be why there's all that media.
I mean, for me, it was one of the biggest things that got programmed into my little brain as a kid. It was just dinosaurs freaking everywhere. I can't unlearn all my love for dinosaurs because it came at me from every damn angle, you know, dinosaur nuggets and dinosaur Happy Meals. And I remember there was a playground that was by my house and everything there was dinosaur themed. So dinosaurs, dang, again, like if I go around and like look out in public, like now, and I go into the comic shop or I go to Disney and stuff, I don't see almost anything dinosaur related, at least not to the same effect. And I'm not counting woolly mammoths because they're not really technically dinosaurs.
And I'm also giving the perspective from Japan, so it's obviously going to be a little different with kids in Japan and kids in America. So I feel like they might be a little more into it here. Maybe, I don't know. Again, I don't really know what the states are like.
Well, we got more Jesus over here, and Jesus and dinosaurs don't mix as well as most people would expect.
Oh, right, of course. Well, because now the world needs to be, what is it, 5,000 years old? Depending on how deep you are in the Jesus pool,
Then there's the classic maybe. Bill Hicks joke that I won't retell, but the whole premise is that Satan basically buried fake dinosaur bones just to trick humans so that when they find them, they would question their faith and then therefore go to hell because of the dinosaur. That's one of my favorite versions of, you know, how dinosaur bones exist. Is that like, yeah, they're there, but they were put there by the devil
to send you to hell. Yeah, so many things in the world to send you to hell. I don't know. I guess that's just, you can live in that mindset if you want, but it doesn't sound like a good time. Every corner fraught with danger. Well, as a guy who tries to not believe in things at all, what dinosaur take do you want to take?
Oh, so there are a few different dinosaur takes. I'll just out myself here and probably disappoint a lot of people that like the stuff that I do, conspiracy theory and paranormal and all this stuff related. But if you haven't figured out by now, because of my deep MK Ultra programming that lasted for well over a decade and a half of just like love dinosaur real, I still fall on the dinosaurs are real side of the spectrum. But I've come across a lot of people that aren't necessarily on the same page. So there's kind of like four categories. I'm making these categories up myself. I didn't find them somewhere. But I feel like the first one is just the run-of-the-mill, the official story. Yes, there was dinosaurs. They were killed by meteors. And, you know, that's the end of it. And they didn't live at the same time as humans and all the, like, the company line, right? Then there's the yes, but version. So it's like, yes, but the meteors isn't what ended the dinosaurs, that they had this gradual decline that was evident in the fossil record prior to this impact, the Chicxulub crater. I'm going to pronounce that name horribly, but that it wasn't necessarily a meteor that ended it, but it was, you know, climate change or some kind of a cyclical event that was maybe antagonized by, but not directly caused solely by the meteor. So then you've got the two yeses, and then you've got two noes. The first one is no, it's mostly lies that maybe some larger animals existed, but that when the bones were found, these two dudes, which we'll get into, were just like assembling them however they decided to kind of like get the up on the other one. So there was literally some cases where they were like putting the head that they found onto like the wrong side of the dinosaur, then naming it some weird thing. So there's that version that no, dinosaurs aren't real because of the bone wars. And then there's just a straight up dinosaurs never existed. The bones didn't exist. Everything's fabricated. Tartaria is real. Simulation theories, you know, that one dovetails into a million other ones. But I feel like those are the big four, two yeses and two noes. So out of all those, I'm probably on the yes official story route, maybe leaning towards yes, but with like some misconfigured stuff going on.
Yeah, so I'll default to the yes, but you know, I'm perfectly happy to have a conversation about all four. I'll just add in a couple rando ones. One is silly, one a little less silly. Not silly. Well, first one's silly. That's Star Trek Voyager, where somehow dinosaurs were like transported to the other side of the galaxy, evolved, and we meet dinosaur aliens in an episode. So that's fun. the other one, I think this might be like Dolores Cannon, Jane Roberts sort of stuff, where like as reality evolved, just all of the stuff kind of evolved together. I guess that's the kind of idea that the universe just snapped into slowly, or not even snapped, slowly evolved into being through consciousness and that sort of thing, in which the dinosaurs are there and you could say that they're from the past, but I don't know. It's been a while since I read that stuff, but I like the trippiness of it, I guess is why I'm
you
saying
lost
that.
Me a little bit. I don't get what you mean. Like dinosaurs exist now in an alternate dimension.
Well, oh, you get quantum and you can say that. Sorry, I'm losing myself because it's so kind of tripped out. But I guess the idea that a universal consciousness slowly brought reality into being. So time doesn't matter, right? Just the time you're at the moment, which is the fully constructed version.
So I think dinosaur, therefore there are dinosaur.
Yes. In the medium you're in right now, the dinosaurs are real, but nothing happened except for now, right? So that's the trippy stuff, which I'd like that stuff. That's fun. It's mind games for yourself.
It feels borderline simulation theory.
It's working on it, but it's a little more like you are the progenitor of the simulation, coo-coo, as opposed coo-coo to something else. Yeah. That's you are the Archon and you are the Demiurge. You're actually creating this. And by saying you, I also mean everybody else.
Yeah, we are all one. We are all dinosaur.
That's that one. But anyway, I'm
not a fan of those ones that go into like we are all one simulation, even if it's true. Let's say that that's objectively true. It's sort of a conversational dead end. It's an intellectual dead end. Because then you're just like, yeah, you're right. and then, you know, change subject.
I mean, I could tell you, again, this is not a belief, but it's something I like to think about. And hey, it could be correct that imagine everyone, every being, every animal has kind of like a, like, let's just say like a spiral of, not a spiral, but a rod of energy going through you, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the same for everyone. So everything around you is what is creating the personality, right? So, but the general observer is exactly the same no matter who you're talking about. But since I'm taking on this role and I do these things and I've gotten used to doing these things, I've gotten used to not liking these things. So then when you meet someone that you have nothing in common with, you know, the core is the same. It's just like they've had such a different trip and they live in such a different meat bag that it's hard to relate.
Yeah, we've all got different brand name VR helmets. That's, I can't remember. Oh, David Icke told me that.
Right, right. It's that Red Dwarf episode, Back to Reality. That one's kind of fun for a simulation theory laugh or two. But yeah, kind of the idea that your body is the VR helmet, you know, interfacing with this reality. So your body's the temple. That's what they say. I mean, that's a weird thing. You can say it different ways and go back, and the Tibetan Buddhists are saying the same thing, just using different words, you know?
So like, in this analogy, do dinosaurs, presuming dinosaurs were real, they were basically me or you, they just had a much heavier, different VR helmet.
In different ways of thinking through that, but the observer would be the same. Yes, that it would be the take on that. The
so dinosaurs have souls?
Well, they have as much as anyone does, I guess would be the point.
Even if they predate the concept of religion itself, they would still have souls. Because there's another one I've been going on this other tangent of, like the bicameral mind theory, which apparently has been disproven. It's kind of like Lamarckian in a way, but or it might have been Darwinian. But the bicameral mind theory is almost implies that consciousness is like a learned behavior, and that it's part of like an evolving way of thinking, and that in the past, our ancient ancestors might not have been conscious at all, because they hadn't thought about it yet. You know what I mean? And so in that kind of premise, it's like religion as we know it didn't exist then, and it definitely didn't exist before, I guess, humans were around. So did souls exist around then?
I guess what I'm trying to say is in what I'm talking about, the term soul and consciousness wouldn't have any meaning. It would just be observer, you know?
Like a passenger in Dexter.
Yeah, but you are, you know, what they say, the whole Maya thing, like reality only exists while we're sleeping. If we were awake, then it wouldn't.
Right, and it's like a shared group of hallucinations that we all just agree on, very specific hallucinations, so then therefore we see them all.
Right, but ultimately we're all agreeing with ourselves, which is, that is the, we are all one thing, but I'm trying, you know, through an Eastern philosophy rather than just like let's hold hands and sing.
So if everyone stops believing in dinosaurs, do they cease to exist?
Possibly. I don't know. That, you know, we talk about Mandela effects and things, and things that seem to exist that don't exist, or you start to realize sometimes you're Mandela affecting some of your own memories, you know. So
I'm also, I don't, not to disappoint, but I'm not really a huge person that buys into the Mandela effect, mainly because I have absolutely no faith in the human brain as an efficient memory storage unit. Like, it just doesn't work that way. In fact, it's more like a Xerox machine, where like you might have the original somewhere, but it's like stuck in the Xerox machine and you'll never get it out. And the best chance you've got is to keep hitting copy. But every time you hit copy, like one of the copies replaces the original and it gets pushed deeper down somewhere. So like the 200th time you remembered something, it's that 200th Xerox, and you think that you know all the detail, but you're just remembering the crappy details from the previous iteration and so on. And so on. So I'm, long story is that I don't think anyone's memory is so good that the universe changes around you versus you misremembered something.
No, for me, it's just like you get an article about that and you just get the dopamine kick when you're like, oh, dang, it is Berenstain. That's crazy. You know, there's a certain joy when you first encounter a fact like that.
Yeah, I guess. And the Fruit of the Loom one too. People get all excited when they find the Fruit of the Loom with the cornucopia. I know for a fact that I've seen both versions of that. Like, that's not meant. I don't know. It's a silly topic that I'm happy to entertain, but not when we're supposed to be talking about dinosaurs.
Yeah, yeah. So, I guess it's just pleasurable to do to have that little mental kick in the head. Let's see. I'm having a look through my notes. Temporal jump cut. Oh yeah, when Aladar does hook up with the other dinosaurs, it got like kind of weirdly horny really quick. So that was kind of weird. And then they called him a Jerkosaurus, which I took the wrong way. So no, when they first said Jerkosaurus, I was writing the movie getting horny on them. They called him a Jerkosaurus, like right there. And I'm like, what? Oh, okay, because he's being a jerk.
Well, also, if you think about it, the main character is quite literally the first incel ever.
Yeah, like, well, I wrote Kron as kind of a eugenics guy. I guess because he's like a cult leader trying to like set everything up, you know, and let the weak die, of course.
Well, yeah, kind of. Although I think it was more like anyone that found a mate was able to, you know, figure out this family life. It's very weird. Like they have all the young lemurs go off and meet like a match and they do a dance. And then if there's any lemurs left over, there's one lemur left over, some dude, and like he doesn't get a partner. So then all of a sudden the focus is like, oh, you know, poor lemur, what's he gonna do? He's got no companion. And then it leads to the dinosaur, because the dinosaur, for yeah, another premise, if you haven't seen the movie Dinosaur, the concept is at the very beginning his parents die, spoiler alert, Disney proxy, first 5 minutes, and then the egg basically gets carried away to like another continent, essentially, like across the ocean, we'll say. And then it finds itself in what I'll call Lemuria, because it's basically just a bunch of lemurs that are living there. So now this single reptile dinosaur egg grows up and hatches on an island full of only lemurs, and now it's like the only dinosaur around. So therefore, when they do this big mating ritual, it becomes painfully obvious that this dude's not gonna get a mate because he can't bang a lemur. So he kind of becomes this, like, he's an incel, right? He's involuntary celibate by the very definition of the word.
I only worked out that actual meaning like a week ago, and then my fellow co-hosts on our show are like, oh, you're so lucky that you just worked it out only last week.
I mean, this is the, and so we've got these four premises in the dinosaur movie. One, do dinosaurs exist at all, which we kind of covered. Then there's the meteor theory. Then there's Lemuria, which I think is probably like the deepest occult cut in this movie, is they are implying Lemuria. Like that's the whole reason that we have all these lemurs. And then the fact that there's like this, this like incel attitude for the main character. And then when you said it gets immediately horny, well, that's what an incel does. You know what I mean? Like the first chance that you feel like you've got a chance at something, now all of a sudden you're going to get like super creep about it, and it's going to be laser focused.
Yeah. So yeah, hormones at work. My note after that, by the way, is you see the dinosaurs are dying because of man-made climate change. I just seen a CNN article where they said something, they had like underlined man-made climate change, like in the sentence. So just in case you didn't notice that part, you noticed it because they underlined it.
Well, and there's a, I guess like a cult speaking, but I hear this come up a lot, that another version, if it's, you know, not man-made, let's say it's not climate change that's going to wipe us out next time, that it's just a straight up cycle, that there's a cleansing by fire, and then there's a cleansing by water, and then there's a cleansing by fire, and then there's a cleansing by water. And it just kind of cycles through those two different things. You know, it's like a pendulum swinging. So I guess this is the version, or the conventional explanation for the dinosaurs dying was fire. Like that was a, you know, by fire. And then the anti and the post-diluvian, like the flood, that would be a cleansing by water. So humanity is supposed to be cleansed by fire next. And that's why the Book of Revelation is all about, you know, hell on earth and everything else, that it'll be fire. And then after that, there'll be another flood.
Right. I mean, you know, who knows? People could be affecting things, but there's a general thing where the climate is going to change. If nothing else, fast forward a few million years and, you know, well, a few hundred million years and the sun's going to really screw us up, you know?
Well, not if we pay the sun tax. Just like if we pay the carbon tax, climate change goes away. So if we figure out a way to just pay a sun tax, then there's no way the sun will explode.
We've got this figured out.
Politics is going to save us.
Do we launch rockets of money into the sun?
Yeah.
We're shooting money into the sun. One of my favorite Mr. Show sketches is always the America's going to blow up the moon. And because we can, we have the tools. It's possible. And then when the moon finally blows up, it goes to the next sketch of people just in a board meeting. And you see a window and in the background, you see as they're talking about something completely different. So,
I always wonder, like, does that end the world? Does water, like, do the waves just stop because the moon's no longer having its own gravitational, like, pull on or anything?
Well, I do. One of my podcasts is currently on Space 1999, the premise of which is the nuclear waste stored on one side of the moon blasts it out of moon's orbit, and somehow it reaches, like, a different planet every week. Despite, you know, we won't think about that, but they do notice they're leaving Earth orbit and getting the final transmissions. You know, you're getting like giant tidal tsunamis and earthquakes and stuff. And in season two, they get back in contact with Earth, and because of, you know, time stuff, it's now 2120 or something, and they get a transmission from Texas City, where it's in a desert, of course, but it's a, you know, domed raised cities. They're like, oh, well, when your crew got beamed here, they can't be outside because the air is no longer breathable. But it's implied that the moon leaving orbit might be responsible for at least some of that, if not all of that. Anyway, I don't know where that tangent was going other than Space 1999 is really trippy.
Well, and there's also Iron Sky 2 has a dinosaur on the moon. So there you go. There's your connection.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. What's on the far side of the moon?
It's basically like, Hitler rides a T-Rex on the moon.
Yes. Oh, right. Okay. I think that's in my Blu-ray dump too. I'll have to get to that. I didn't know.
Have you not seen either of the Iron Skies?
I've seen like the first half of the first one, but I'm assuming that's a like second half of the movie incident with riding the dinosaur.
No, that's the sequel, I believe, that takes place on the moon.
Oh, okay, okay. I do want to call out the soundtrack for this is very well regarded. I think it's James Howard Newton is his name, and that was actually the best reviewed part of this movie. And the Egg Journey part like was used in like every trailer for 5 years after this movie came out. So if nothing else hit, yeah, this movie was wildly successful. It was like it was in the top five grossing movies of the year when it came out. I feel like it's kind of weirdly forgotten, though. Am I wrong on that?
I feel like at this point going forward, like we're no longer the authority on how well these movies did with pop culture, because, you know, like we've both admitted, like I don't think either of us saw this movie when it came out, and I don't think I saw any other Disney movie when it came out in the time that it was like wildly popular from this point forward. So maybe, although we're gonna have to rely on, you know, viewers and listeners and comments about like what actual impact this movie had at the time.
And I guess I should throw out that 2004 is when I mostly moved to Japan. I did spend like maybe 2 years after that in the States, but from 2004 on, that's where my weird disconnect with modern culture like really kicks in.
You just start watching anime exclusively?
Yeah, anime exclusively. You know, weirdly, I've never been that into anime. There's a few I like. I'm programming the Miyazakis onto our list because Disney distributed them in the States, and there's a whole lot to talk about in those. So,
are there any animes that feature dinosaurs, like popular ones?
I know there was a kids one that was called Gon that was on. I think it was on NHK, like state TV, but it was G-O-N, Gon the Dinosaur. I just remember because my nephew was really into Gon the Dinosaur when he was about 10 years ago when he was much younger. What else do we have?
Does Godzilla count as a dinosaur?
Okay, if Godzilla counts as a dinosaur, obviously then, you know, dinosaur is a big thing here. I'm gonna go with he's a kaiju. A little different, right?
Well, kaiju, and you're the expert on this compared to me, but kaiju just means like a big thing, right? So technically Ultraman is a kaiju.
You could call a dinosaur,
right?
A
kaiju. Voltron is a kaiju.
Okay. Well, by the way, the successfulness of this movie, it cost $127 million, which is actually pretty insane for the year 2000. Made $350 and was the fifth highest grossing film of 2000, which is nothing to sneeze at, I guess. That's quite successful. So, but
that's what I'm saying, man. Like, I feel so detached from this movie because I wasn't caught up in that hype, but I can see it. Like, I can absolutely see going to see this in the theater, getting the Happy Meal and whatever the hell the toys were for this thing, and becoming like really engrossed in it. Because if like this was maybe 2 or 3 years after I was even like caring about movies, especially Disney and stuff, but if I had just been born 3 years later, this would have been like the huge crescendo of all that dinosaur programming. This would have been like the big one that they hit you with. Because after this, I mean, I think there's Lost World comes out.
That's actually earlier. I think
really Jurassic Lost World was before this. Out. So this is at the tail end of the dinosaur Dino hype, frenzy, in my opinion.
Well, okay, modern. I guess the Jurassic World is quite popular with kids. I don't know what you think, but I watched Jurassic World. I'm like, hey, this movie's not very good, and I didn't watch the second or third one. Right?
This is Chris Pratt. Is Jurassic World is Chris Pratt, right?
Yes. But they're very successful for probably similar reasons, where a lot of kids are like really into them, like we were into Jurassic Park, you know.
God, are we just old hipsters of being like, these kids don't know what real Jurassic Park is? You got to watch the first.
Well, let's be real. Yeah, let's be real. The Lost World and 3 aren't particularly good. I like
no, three the more first than most one people, is but phenomenal though, man. Like beyond phenomenal.
I have a weird soft spot for the third one just because it's weird, but it's not.
That's the one where they come to the States, right?
Yeah, and I think that actually might be the Lost World with the scene at the end where they come in the city. That's the Lost World. The Jurassic Park 3 is the one where the dinosaur talks to him in a dream or something.
Okay, I'm going to have to watch this again. I don't remember this.
And that one's directed by Chris Columbus, not Steven Spielberg.
You know what? I'm just throwing a theory out here, but it's almost like Jurassic Park giveth and Jurassic Park taketh away. Like, they might be the ones that stomps the dinosaur hype back into the ground for another 100 years.
That might be it. I mean, I guess that's the thing. Jurassic World's like, I want to see dinosaurs. I'm a kid. I'm going to put those on. Probably. I'm not ever going to think of putting on Disney's dinosaur from the year 2000. Right.
Maybe you should though. It's not, I mean, if you're putting on for a kid, it's not that bad. It's a serviceable freaking dinosaur movie.
Like this one did not play in my house. It's just, I have a daughter. That's not the first thing you show. However, my nephew is about the same age. They're in like the same school year. And when he was 6 years old, yeah, he would come up every Monday and I'd have to put on Jurassic Park DVDs. He also quickly realized that the first one was by far the best one. So The Lost World and 3 did not get screened much. But yeah, I've seen too much of the Jurassic Park movies because I had to watch them every Monday for like a year.
I'm almost angry at myself for even thinking this, but I might as well just say it. But I wonder if Disney, in the ultimate like switcheroo sacrilege move, but if they remade a 3D version of Land Before Time, which I believe was a Don Bluth thing, which would be like, you know, rubbing salt in some wounds if they actually did that. But seeing Land Before Time with those characters in high res 3D with like the same sort of cartoony movements and everything, that might be something that I'd be interested in seeing. So if Don Bluth wants to patch things up.
Like Pixar kind of tried that with The Good Dinosaur, which I guess we will be getting to eventually.
Okay, see, I've never even seen that one.
You're going to in probably like a year's time, judging how this list is looking. But I would say that would be kind of an attempt. Now that one is trying to establish new characters. You're talking about taking the existing characters that somebody has some nostalgia for. That might help a lot. At this point, hey, Disney owns everything. Isn't Disney now technically making the new Alien movie?
I mean, technically, Disney put out The Great Malenko by ICP. So it depends on the technicality, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
If you, and if you count all of Touchstone, then there's a huge gamut that you can include with Disney.
Oh, you absolutely count all of Touchstone. Yeah, I mean, isn't there's Pulp Fiction? Isn't Pulp Fiction a Disney movie? That's Touchstone. Oh, Miramax. Okay. Ooh, Miramax. I just started an avalanche of movies, which sounds about right for this room. I do movie podcasts because I have avalanches of movies in my room and then I have to clean them up. And then I relearned about what movies? Ghost Protocol. Bad superhero movies. Okay. Okay, I cleaned up my mess. There we go. let's see the music. We got the different realms of dinosaurs. The one thing I was going to bring up on Lemuria. I feel like it's not that weird to suggest Lemuria like 100 million plus years ago. 20,000 years ago is when you get a little more argument, I guess, about Lemuria.
Well, Lemuria comes up often with Atlantis theories, and so does Mu or Mu.
I've kind of considered that Mu and Lemuria are the same, mostly the same.
It depends on which freaking weird new age book you've read most recently. But so my understanding of Lemuria, though, is basically like a smaller, more recent version of Pangaea, with the Pangaea ideas that like all the continents were together at one point and then they all drifted apart, and that's what describes different continents having like similar species. And that's exactly what Lemuria is that I think like Madagascar or something, and then somewhere else far removed from Madagascar, they both had lemurs, but there was like almost no like obvious way that they could have traveled across the world to populate these two very specific areas. So the theory of Lemuria is that they were all in one central area. All the lemurs in the world kind of shared one ecosystem, and then something happened that split that ecosystem and moved them far to, you know, other ends of the earth. And that's my understanding of what Lemuria means.
Okay. Yeah, I've probably read more of the weird new age books on that like 5 years ago when that was kind of my jam.
Well, because one of the new age versions is that like whatever caused, I'm oversimplifying this to the point of probably butchering it, but that when like Atlantis fell, that was a like the same representation of the type of thing that caused Lemuria to split.
Yeah, I guess I've been on the, again, this is just like things I find interesting, but yeah, like the Pacific version is Mu or Lemuria, which I'm conflating as one thing, which another person may not. And then Atlantis being in the Atlantic and, you know, being what basically for the Bimini Road to the Canary Islands, probably still mostly water, I think, but some of it, you know, obviously drifting down. In Japan, we got Yonaguni. I assume you're, well, I'll just ask if you're familiar with
Yonaguni. I'm not. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Okay, this is in the 1980s where Yonaguni is the westernmost island in Okinawa. It's a pretty small one, but just off the coast, they found underwater things that look like very large stairs. And there's, of course, the argument if those things are man-made or just weird natural constructions. So. Natural constructions. Did I use that word wrong? I don't know. But that's Yonaguni. You'd spell it in English, Yonaguni.
Oh, in case anyone had that on their crossword, you're welcome.
Yes, you're welcome. But yeah, the pictures of those are cool. Like when I look at those, I'm like, those do look like a structure that somebody built at some point.
I like those theories. A lot of those are some of the original conspiracy theories, or at least like paranormal and that, and what, like the seven wonders of the world, that even in the ancient world, it was people that were like, man, that's crazy. Did that really exist? I wish I can't name all seven anymore. I used to be able to.
Like, I generally don't like the ancient aliens theories. Now, that said, I absolutely love the whole, you know, Nibiru Anunnaki story stuff. I've read all of Sitchin's books, or at least the main sequence of them. So do I like that stuff? Yes, but I don't like that. I'm more like, humans are smart, right? And I bet humans used to have like other civilizations in the past. I like that. I like that idea. That's
humor's just smart, right? Fast forward to someone spending like 8 hours just posting about Berenstain and Berenstain Bears.
Good point. And then another 8 reading about it. But I do like the idea that we had high civilizations that have been destroyed and forgotten. I think that's fascinating. And there does seem to be enough evidence to at least float that idea out there, which gets shut down. That's the thing. You bring out the idea, gets shut down so quickly. That's when it becomes a conspiracy, right? It's like,
well, imagine this. Imagine you got all of like the AI, the leading AI scientists in a room together. It can't be that many, you know, 10,000. I think I'm being generous on that. Like all of the people that understand the most, and then something tragic happens and all 10,000 of those scientists are no longer with us. Like we might not discover AI in the same way again. The same thing is like an EMP goes off and no one figures out how to undo it and turn a computer back on for 200 years. There's a good chance that like computers just will cease to exist. I mean, of course, this also implies that like all the manuals are gone and like all of the supplies are gone and all the record of all of this are gone. But if it were just wiped out, because this is what happened to architecture too, that for like the longest time, the quality of architecture went down because a lot of the original plans were kind of lost and they got discovered during the Renaissance, I believe. And during the Renaissance, they figured out how to do all these classic architectural structures again that had been lost to time. And it was all attributed to like one dude that wrote it down and someone that found it. So that kind of thing always reminds, and I wish I could think of all the names of these stories. Just trust me, bro, on the source on this one. But that I really, really think that we kind of like overestimate how fragile our technology is, like the Tower of Babel, right? If someone just removed language and humans could no longer communicate with each other in a similar language and there was no languages anywhere, how long would it take to rebuild everything that we've got?
Well, I mean, trying to build a Gothic cathedral now would be nigh on impossible. They're just now finishing up the Sagrada Familia, right? And Mitsubishi a few decades ago tried to build a scale model of the pyramid, which they could not do.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. I think I'm on two minds of this. One is that maybe we've lost all the plans. And the other thinking is that, yeah, but they didn't have to worry about workman's comp and child labor laws or any of that. So maybe like there's ways that we know it could happen, but it's like, we're going to get Bob to like, you know, shimmy this piece in and then just kind of let the rock fall on him. Like this is how we're going to have to do this. You know what I mean? Like that version of, and I'm not saying that there's like, you know, skeletons under all the bricks in the Great Pyramid or anything, but it could have been possible. It could have been on the table where it's no longer on the table. I don't think anyone's allowed to do that anymore.
Well, things are built for practicality and quantity and not, you know, for last, like the house I'm seeing in now and likely yours. I don't know if you live in a big brick bombshell or not, but you know, this house is very likely not going to be here 100 years ago. And I would say 99% sure not here 200 years from now, different than all those structures just mentioned. I mean, excuse me. Another thing in Japan, like really old shrines and temples, often you're not seeing the original. They intentionally tear, there's some shrines in Japan, they intentionally tear them down every 17 or 70 years and just rebuild them to specs. So you're not seeing the original.
Or are you?
Ooh. Well, sometimes you are, or sometimes they tell you are, you know, but especially in cities, you know, it's more likely that this shrine has been taken down and rebuilt a few times as a ritual thing. I mean, partly for upkeep and to have it nice and new, partly for the, you know, kind of the Zen idea of destruction and renewal.
And speaking of not seeing the original, this is probably beaten into the ground at this point for almost every living person on the planet. But if you didn't know, almost every dinosaur, in quotes, fossil that you see in any museum or anywhere is likely not the real thing. They're all reproductions. This started sometime in the 80s, I think, where one museum in particular just started swapping out the real dinosaur, quote unquote, real dinosaur bones, so no one gets triggered, with these replicas, because the replicas were almost impossible to tell the difference. And it meant that every museum in the world could theoretically all have dinosaur bones, even if they didn't actually have dinosaur bones. The premise, and I guess part of the academic promise here, is that anything that you see in a museum was fashioned after a thing that really existed somewhere. But this is, I think, what also leads to a lot of people's distrust, because so many people went and saw dinosaur bones in museums and always thought, like, I saw a real dinosaur. And really, you just saw a bunch of resin and plastic and like a really nice airbrushing job.
The main temple in where I live is called Zenkoji. Their idol is permanently hidden. Only the high priestess, it's the only one with the priestess, can see it. Every 7 years, they have a big festival where they unveil the replica of the idol that you can't see. So mm-hmm. even for the big festival, it's still like, and it's, no one thinks it's the original. They're very clear, like, this is a replica of it. You can see it every 7 years. You never get to see the real one. Which,
so does the real one exist? Are there conspiracy theories that it doesn't exist?
I don't think so. And if it doesn't exist, well, the replica exists. So it's just kind of, especially to a Western mind, it's like weird, like getting excited about seeing the fake, you know? No, you can't see the real one.
Well, again, maybe that's why that it's not really advertised. Like, you don't go into a dinosaur exhibit at the Museum of Natural History. At least I didn't when I went there in like the 80s. But it's not like there's posters all over the place. It's like, I remember, this is all fake. You know what I mean? Like, everything there is oriented towards it being real. In fact, I wouldn't doubt that they spray like musky scent in the air just to make it smell like they might be real dinosaur bones.
Well, that segues us into the Disney rides, where they do that. I guess the two major dinosaur ones, well, more than two. Two in Florida would be what Countdown to Extinction, which was that for 1 year. Then changed to be this movie. I think they changed the dinosaur to actually be Aladar. And it's been dinosaur since. And I think it's on its death knells now. I think there's a lot of talk of changing that into something else now. But did you have a chance to check out that any?
I didn't have a chance to look at it yet.
Okay. It's basically a dark, scary, and loud ride. It's not the best one to watch on YouTube. You know, if you put Peter Pan's Flight on YouTube, it's always, it's, oh yeah, I can remember being on the ride, where this one's mostly dark and scary. It's a time travel institute where you are traveling back to just before the meteor hit to save a dinosaur. And in the newer version, it's
Aladar. A dinosaur?
I think it's just a random one. You're just going to collect a dinosaur. Last time I rode this was 2001, right after his movie came out. So, you know, eight. I went through with my wife. 2008. So it's not the freshest memory on the mind. And the videos are kind of dark and weird to watch. But I was just thinking they pumped some smell into there. And there was the Universe of Energy at Epcot, the very long ride where they make you watch a dumb movie. Possibly with Ellen in the later years, and then you ride through the dinosaur room. Well, it was Ellen's Energy Adventure for like 20 years.
Ellen Energy sounds like a horror ride.
It's a kind of a horror ride of late 90s references. That's now Guardians. That's been completely changed. But yeah, Ellen's Energy Adventure, where you have Bill Nye the Science Guy saying, "Well, we can't give up on fossil fuels quite yet." And I'm like, yeah, say that now, man. He won't say that anymore. So it's a weird place. The 80s version's even weirder. I guess Exxon was supporting it. And there was a comic book with Mickey Mouse and Goofy coming to the same conclusion that maybe we have to keep using gasoline for now.
I mean, this is another one of the dinosaur conspiracies, or the anti-dinosaur conspiracies, that we've all been lied to about fossil fuel. Like, literally the name fossil fuels, meaning that it came from dinosaurs that were compressed under the earth and all this. There's other suggestions that it came from algae, and that it's a renewable source, and that we'll always have oil constantly being uncovered, and it's not like it was just created in this one period of time, which is the premise of fossil fuels, is that almost that like there's a finite supply, and that once we tap into it and we suck it all out of the earth, like, it's gone for good, or at least until you wait another 60 million years and then you might have like a resupply. That's one of the concepts that is debated heavily in like the conspiracy realms, that it's all just a big front put on by big oil. Like, the oil industry wants you to think that it's this very rare finite resource that requires all of this manpower and resources in order to extract and then process and refine. So some of the, I guess the whole conspiracy theory there revolves around like, no, it's real easy. Like that's kind of the conspiracy theory.
Where does fracking enter into that theory? Is that just like, haha, look what we're doing now, screw you?
Part of that, but also it's that like they're, I mean, how far do you want to go into the conspiracy theory angle? But one of them is that they're looking for giants. They're looking for buried underground Nephilim and that they're using fracking as a reason to do this deep drilling into the earth. It's like, oh, they're going there to get oil. It's like, you know, saying you're going to go out to get a pack of cigarettes and that's not what you're doing.
I support looking for the hollow earth, of course. I want to find that. Actually, yeah. Did you have any other big notes on Dinosaur?
I got a few, I think. Okay. So just some criticisms about how they portray dinosaurs, but I don't know if any of this is legit or not. So, A, when they show the actual dinosaurs and not the lemurs, they're all congregate. Like every different type of dinosaur is all congregated on the very top of this cliff in like a big field. And I would almost expect that if a bunch of different species were to congregate, it would probably be like a watering hole. And it probably wouldn't be on the top of a cliff for these huge creatures that would probably exert lots of energy in order to climb up a freaking cliff. So I don't know. Maybe I'm going way too much in the weeds on this, but there's only one shot when you really see them all together. And it just was weird to not see them at like what I would consider a typical watering hole.
Well, it's like the Lion King. Not all the predators and prey are going to just all congregate in the same place. I mean, I think that's like we think, oh, we go back to dinosaur time and you look around and there's dinosaurs everywhere. You'll probably have to go looking for one, you know? It's not like they're just all over the place. They're large animals.
there's a couple. The opening line of this movie says something about like the smallest things can make the biggest change of all. And all I could think about was 2019, 2020. Like, yeah, like microscopic things can cause like global change. But that's the only dialogue that you hear in the movie for the first like 7 minutes or so. And then you get the annoying like kid voices that make it all cutesy and stuff. Although in retrospect, if I were to think back, if this movie had no dialogue, I don't know if it would have kept my attention as much.
There's one plus on anime. They do kids' voices a whole lot better in Japanese dub anime. I mean, like in like Japanese language anime. The worst, like so I've sometimes had students say, oh, I'm going to watch Miyazaki movies in English to study English. Oh, do not do that. Just watch an English movie and watch Miyazaki in Japanese. you don't want to change that.
Let's see. The lemurs as they're raising. What's his name again? Alisar?
The dinosaur? Aladar.
Aladar. Yeah, the incel Aladar. But he's getting raised by these lemurs. And one of the things that they mention when they first find him is like, we have to teach him to hate meat. So I was looking up like, what do lemurs actually eat? And man, just more bugs. This is just Lion King all over again. Yeah. Where they're going to take this poor carnivore omnivore and just have him eat bugs because somehow eating bugs is morally superior to anything else. But again, like, what about Bug's Life? Does that mean all of those bugs are like open for the taking? In that case, the stakes are much lower.
Yep. All those ants were turned into a black salt rim for a margarita.
And and since the core premise of this whole movie was that Aladar needs to find a mate and that all these lemurs were all finding mates and there was this one that was like left out, I just had to look up, are lemurs anything like bonobos? Because if Aladar was raised by bonobos, then maybe he didn't need to find his own kind. He might have been completely satisfied. And it turns out, yes, lemurs absolutely engage in the same behaviors that bonobos are known for. In fact, I had to look it up. There was an article from USA Today last year, October 23rd, that is saying that the same-sex relationships are common in primates, specifically 51 different species, and that it reduces conflict. So maybe that's why the lemurs were pretty much peaceful compared to the dinosaurs.
Yeah. Of course, this movie does not have the scar. It's, you know, natural disasters and natural aggression. That's basically the antagonist. For, well, there's Kron, I guess, but he's a bit of a scar. But he doesn't, it takes halfway of the movie before he really factors in that much.
Correct. Well, even the original family, like if you notice at the very beginning of the movie, when the egg is still an egg, there's like little dinosaurs that are going like peeking around. And I mean, I was thinking that it was going to try and eat the egg, but it might've just been like a nosy dinosaur, but they kind of like shoo it away like aggressively. So it makes you think that there was some dinosaurs eating other little dinosaurs kind of implied at the beginning.
Right. Right.
So it wasn't conflict free is what I'm getting at. The dinosaurs still had to fight each other.
Yeah, there was still like, so that's why I was saying like natural aggression, but not Shakespearean, you know, plotting, I guess is the difference here. With Kron coming the closest, but like I said, he seemed more just like a, you know, like a eugenicist, dinosaur eugenicist.
And then there was just one other weird part of this movie. So another, like, so after the egg makes its way to Lemuria and it gets raised by these lemurs, they, after their big their ritual, their mating ritual, they notice this, you know, light show in the sky, and spoiler alert, these are the meteors that are like coming and blowing up the earth, and they're sending out these shock waves that are freaking them all out. So they're all trying to like run to the breeding grounds, and that's going to be like the safe place, I guess. I don't think it actually is going to be safe for them, but
they have
breeding grounds.
My last note here is they can call that the promised land, but they're still pretty screwed pretty soon.
Yeah, there's no way, like, there's no place they can go to that's going to save them, which is kind of morbid watching this. Like, it's all in vain. Like, everything that they do is completely in vain. But there's a scene that they're making their way here, and it's almost like the 40 days and 40 nights in the desert. Like, they're falling to exhaustion, and there's this one young dinosaur that collapses, and it's like whining, and there's like, it's a brother or sister, or like its friend is kind of like nuzzling it and trying to help it out. And it's like, man, this movie got kind of dark. Are they going to show like a young dinosaur just completely die of exhaustion, like right here? But the mom dinosaur comes up to it and nudges it, and it's kind of like, come on, little one, we're going to make it, forces it to get on its feet. But I was just thinking, like, If it had a heat stroke, or if it like actually passed out from exhaustion, this is kind of teaching the wrong lesson of like, just keep pushing, you know what I mean? And I get the concept here, but it was like, it felt cruel. It almost felt like
that she was forcing this
dinosaur to like kill itself.
That happened in the Rite of Spring bit. I mean, no talking, of course, but a similar nudging, a collapsing dinosaur and a nudging along, I believe happens in Fantasia.
That's a good point. There might be a really deep connection here to Fantasia.
I also had two points on that. One, the sun, I think I reverse MK altered myself a bit. I got really uncomfortable when they show the blinding sun, possibly because on Sunday, it was the first hot day of the year. And I changed all the tires on my car, and there were no clouds. So it was like kind of torturous. it wasn't that hot, but it hasn't been warm yet. So I was just changing the tires.
That's why we got to send rockets full of money into the sun, man. I'm telling you, we got to start a GoFundMe for this.
Yep. Yep. George Carlin is right. You know, I choose my God. I can see it. The other one is, it was funny you mentioning, are we just going to watch this, dinosaur die? There's a science museum in Joetsu, which is a city on the coast, and they have a nice dinosaur animatronic, a very cool one. And then they show a movie in that room, which is like sub Bugs Life CGI, showing the end of the dinosaurs, where it shows the head and the dinosaurs collapsing, and the movie ends and fades away with like the baby dinosaur like freezing to death in a nuclear winter. I'm like, well, that I've seen this, dude. Of course, I'm watching it's on Japanese too, because I'm in a Japanese science museum, so it's just depressing Japanese in this kind of tone of voice, you know, komenasai, that sort of thing. It's like super depressing. I'm like, are they scarring all these young children watching this? Because it seems like they might be. I mean, like a traumatizing video at the science museum.
If you take the general story of dinosaurs, it is depressing for everyone involved because there's nothing anyone could have done to save the dinosaurs. Like, there's just nothing, right? Outside of a time machine, right? If aliens use a time machine, which on its own right, philosophically, right? Let's say that you had the opportunity that the world was ending, but you could have a completely foreign species, like a tiny, minuscule, like ants, right? Ants in the future could time travel back to you, and instead of you dying with your family and your friends and all of human civilization, they pluck you from your fate and they bring you into the future that's just ruled by ants. Is that a better outcome for you, or would you rather just go out with like the rest of your kind?
Well, we see that in a lot of movies. The end of AI, you could say that's kind of that vibe, where they bring mom back and bring the robot kid back. What was the other one that just come to mind? The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where he just, before the Earth is destroyed, Arthur Dent just gets plucked away into like the worst alien race possible. Vogon poetry, yes.
So yes or no?
No, I just heard a vacuum cleaner come on. That's all. I was like, what's happening? And it's a vacuum cleaner. So hopefully it's not in on the recording, but I got a mute button too. So did you hit all your points?
Yeah, I mean, just dinosaur fever and whether or not dinosaurs are real. I'm pro dinosaurs being real, just for the record.
Yeah, and I will too, but I'm perfectly happy to have a conversation about like whatever, you know. It can be fun.
Yeah, and the Bone Wars were real. Fake dinosaurs were invented just for credibility. One of the guys that was the originator of it was two main, man, I'm trying to scrape my brain for what their names were, but one of them was it was basically Darwin versus Lamarckian evolutionary theory. So they had like a lot on the table. It wasn't just about dinosaurs and it wasn't just about credentials, but it was pretty much about those two. There was a guy named Othniel Charles Marsh, and he was one side of it. He was like the academic version. And then there was a guy called Edward Drinker Cope, which is pretty badass. Drinker Cope.
Yeah, that's what I'll say. Was he an alcoholic? Well, he lived in the 19th century. Yes, he was.
Well, so throw in a little bit extra on the conspiracy fire for the reason why people don't trust that dinosaurs are real at all is because these two guys started these dinosaur bone wars. They were fighting against each other. Well, Marsh, he goes to Yale and becomes the first professor of paleontology ever. Like, he founds the entire field of paleontology, and he's one of these guys that is part of this this huge issue where they were kind of like fabricating evidence and making stuff up. So not all parties involved had the exact same amount of blame, but this was where they were just like rearrange. It was almost like a prehistoric Taco Bell where they would just rearrange the ingredients a little bit and call it something else, and you could just like keep naming things. And I think they started out cool with each other. They were like naming dinosaurs after each other, but then it got to a certain point where credibility and funds and just prestige, it turned into like this all-out war. So that's one of the huge reasons. And I mean, I didn't get to do enough research to see if Othniel Charles Marsh was in the Skull and Bones at Yale, but I feel like if you're one of the first professors of an entire field, you're at least rubbing elbows with some of the Skull and Bones. And how could you be involved in the Bone Wars and be at Yale and not at least run up into the Skull and Bones?
Yeah, it's in the name. Jeez. I know there's at least one or... there's some dinosaurs that we grew up with that I believe they've been like, yeah, that definitely wasn't a thing. Like, I want to say it was either Stegosaurus or Brontosaurus. It's been basically
a Brontosaurus redacted. Is one that I think it gets referred to as like the Allosaurus or Allonosaurus or something. To me, Brontosaurus is real. It's always going to be real in the back of my head. The Land of Before Time has etched it there permanently.
Yes.
Like Littlefoot is a Brontosaurus, right?
Yeah. And I was thinking of also just 19th century other, you know, in the field fallacies, the whole pyramid thing where apparently the guy just went in and painted, you know, cartouches, and the next day they went in and found the poorly made cartouches, and now we're all like, it was Khafra's pyramid or whatever, whoever it was.
Oh, I do have to point out too that one of the other anti-dinosaur theories, which I don't give a lot of credit to, but I have to, I guess, point it out since we've been going over a lot of them, is that people will just say, like, well, how did dinosaurs bang? Like, how did two brontosauruses bang? How did two T-Rexes bang? Well, I mean, you could pose the same, here's the devil's advocate version, you could pose the exact same question if you saw, like, a duck cloaca. You'd be like, oh, how the hell are these things going together? But then you see a duck's blastic penis, which looks like a corkscrew, and then you're just like, nature, you've done it again. You know what I mean? Like, nature finds a way. So just because, as a human being, you're visually looking at something and being like, I can't tell how these two things would bang, doesn't mean that, you know, there isn't a device that has been created by nature to facilitate that process. So all we know is the T-Rex had a freaking corkscrew.
Yeah, they weren't watching the Discovery Channel after dark. I guess we'll wrap this one up then. If I don't have anything else.
I think we did a decent amount on this one for what it was.
And my last note was shortest modern feature film minus credits? Question mark. The credits started.
It was like longer than a minute and or an hour and 14, which I feel is the perfect length for a Disney movie. This one was an hour and 28, so we're inching closer to those 90-minute runtimes.
But it had like a good 10 minutes of credits, so it did come close to your platonic ideal if you don't count the credits. Because, you know, like Pinocchio or whatever doesn't have credits. It's just like the end. So
I feel like my ideal Disney movie is like 48 minutes plus maybe 12 minutes of credit. But yeah, we're nowhere near that anymore.
Oh, okay. I'm still building up this 2011 Winnie the Pooh. You just described the form of that one.
Okay. Don't overhype it.
I am overhyping it now. Sorry. I think it's good, though. What's going on in your world then?
Just wrapped up chosenone.com. It's still available. If you go to chosenone.com, we'll have it so it forwards to the site and you can get a copy and everything. But the big one now is my first ever all adult mature comic series called Illuminati, which you can check out at adultoccult.com. Don't worry, there won't be any like boobs that pop up on the screen the second you go there or anything. It's all that's going to be hidden behind the well-crafted covers of the comic books. But it is a full-blown series. It's four different issues, two stories per issue. Each one's around 20 pages. So it's over 80 pages of original artwork, original stories, all with very adult occult themes. So if that any of that sounds interesting, this one has almost been promoting itself. And I'm almost at there's almost a danger that if this does really well, Paranoid American just might exclusively do adult comics only. Going forward, we'll see how well it does, but so far the response has been pretty phenomenal. So if you're interested, yeah, go to adultoccult.com and you'll figure out how you can grab some copies.
Say it three times fast. That's gonna be difficult.
It's Beetlejuice rules. Adult occult.
Nah, the third one was something else.
Well, I don't want to summon anything right now.
Okay. I do a lot of podcasting about bits and bobs of filmed media. If you want to find where all those are kind of thrown together, that's on Patreon at Podcastio Podcastius. I mentioned I talk about really what are supposed to be really good movies and really bad movies. That's on Films and Filth, the Citizen Kane of Podcasting. I talk about Space 1999 on Podcast 1999 and The Twilight Zone on Time Enough Podcast. Okay, I think that I'll cover mine today and be selfish.
Do we have a quirky dino exit?
You heard my brain sputtering a second ago trying to think of one. I think I'm just gonna growl again.